Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to GeneOliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Gene Oliver, and today I'm talking with Jeremy Reeves and Martin Drexler of The Good Voice Group. The Good Voice Group has the most incredible name for a marketing and branding agency. In a world where so much comes at us, your name alone suggests that you will help us cut through the noise and also help us to be intentional about what we put out ourselves. Now more than ever before, all business owners need this resource and encouragement. Jeremy and Martin, I'm looking forward to our discussion today, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Gene. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hi, Gene.
Hi. So glad to have both of you. Jeremy and Martin, would you please take a moment to tell our listeners about the Good Voice Group and your roles in the agency?
Yeah, absolutely. So Good Voice Group was started by the third partner who couldn't be here with us today. His name is Harris Kalafonos. He is from Greece, just recently became an American citizen. His last name in Greek means good voice. He started Good Voice Group a number of years ago, basically as a kind of freelance business consulting company. He helps small businesses sort of get all of their books in order and get all the appropriate paperwork filed with the state so they could operate. And then he would bring his clients who needed branding to us, and we would help create their visual and verbal identity. And at some point we just decided, hey, this makes sense just to do this all together. We are genuinely loving what we're doing together. So let's just throw in together and make a go of it together. What, anything that you'd add to that, Martin?
Well, I think it's important to mention also that Harris has a very unique background being involved with the Olympic Games for a while. He has been traveling around the globe for them doing hospitality. So he kind of brings this global view on businesses that you can benefit from, either you're small or big, like Panasonic is one of his big clients. But he has that understanding between governments, between borders and countries that I think is a very unique skill to have these
days. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you want to talk about what you do and then I'll talk about what I do in Good Voice Group?
Sure. So I'm Martin and I'm part, first off, we don't really have absolutely nailed down roles at Good Voice Group. We're only three people, but we want to benefit from each one of our skills as much as possible. So yes, on paper, I would be the creative director, if you want to call it like that, but I'm not restricting myself to only having that role versus, you know, I always value Jeremy's input and everything and Harris's too. So I kind of don't want us to restrict on those roles too much, because that kind of, you know, doesn't allow for much open ideas. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not an expert on every topic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that we really value is, so maybe in distinguishing ourselves from another company that thinks in terms of roles, is we just think in terms of our gifts. What are the things that Martin is particularly good at? What are the things that Harris is particularly good at? And the same for me. And like we said, Harris is really gifted at understanding these integral connections across businesses, across disciplines, and across borders. I think my gifts that I bring to the table are, so my title is content and understanding. So I do a lot of writing for the company and for our clients. But something that's really important to us, that the way we start with every client is this process of what we call brand discovery and understanding. And what we're doing is developing, both for our sake, but also for the client's sake, a deep sense of who they are at the core of their being. We're totally uninterested in creating a visual identity or a verbal identity for someone who we don't understand and who doesn't understand themselves. So my role early on in the process is sort of like a counselor to the business. Mm-hmm. I just ask a ton of questions, a ton of follow-up questions, a lot of why questions when they answer a question with regard to their bottom line or with regard to their payroll. And I want to know, but why is that important? Why does that make your heart beat? Why does that motivate you to get out of bed every morning? And so what we're trying to do is get a sense of the deep humanity at the core of the business. And that's a big part of my role. And then we just kind of create a set of statements reflecting what we hear from our clients back to them. So they hear us say, in kind of the best possible world, this is who you are. And there's this great back and forth for a number of weeks as we do that with our clients, as we sort of, you can imagine like a funnel, and the longer we go, the closer we get to that point where mm-hmm. they say, yes, the way you've articulated is exactly us. We feel that deeply. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very surprising how deep you can actually go in those sessions of understanding. I mean, we're literally digging deep. It goes into relationships between the people involved, mm-hmm. who has a voice over what part of the business. There might even be conflicts popping up that mm-hmm. they haven't discovered yet. We literally had understanding sessions with companies mm. where people started to cry.
Yes. I mean, that's our sort of core business metric, is if we cry with our client, we feel like we've really nailed it.
I bet it's very common that businesses come to you and they have not clarified their why, and then they don't understand why their message is not clear to their customers. And so by working with you, being able just to talk, being able to be repeated back to them, I mean, they're leaving with clarity that changes all their copy, all of their marketing. And it makes it crystal clear, not just to themselves, but to their customers. And so I love that.
Absolutely. In fact, I think that we would say 100% of our clients come to us with a pretty shallow understanding of who they are. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they don't know. It's that they've never been invited to think deeply about it.
Right.
I actually don't think within the business realm, small and medium-sized businesses, probably true for large businesses as well, I think there's a real lack of value in the getting to the core of who we are as a person, as a business owner, and then how to translate into the kind of culture of our company. And what we do is we make space for people to value that. We invite them to really believe that they have something to offer, that they really can change the world. And I'm happy to talk about that, because I recognize that can be really overwhelming for a lot of people, that maybe that's too big, right? I just want to change my neighborhood. I want to change my city. Changing the world, that's too big. But we invite our clients to believe that they really do have something to offer. And when they have room made for them to do that, some really amazing things happen.
No, I agree. Well, Harris, one of the team members that's not with us today, is the strategic thinker and the international relations expert at your agency. So many of our listeners are small business owners. Some businesses have needed to close temporarily right now. Many may never open again. Some have adapted and are offering their products or services online. And others are online already, but navigating a whole new world. So I submitted this question to Harris before our talk. And would you mind sharing what some of his thoughts are on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And Harris, like we said, has a long history in the Olympic movement, and so tends to think in these very big visionary ways. And so he responded with four R's. So your listeners can write these down. And there's actually some real depth that your listeners can explore within their own circle, in their own business environment, from these four R's. So what he said was, the first step is this new era is going to require a ton of resolve. It is a time where we as small business owners are being pressed in ways that maybe we've never been pressed before. And we can receive that pressing as a kind of discouragement to what we're doing. Oh, I can't keep my restaurant open. I can't keep my pub open. I've got to close my bookstore because people are not allowed to be into it. And what Harris suggests is, let it press you into a resolve, connected to your deepest aspirations. This is a time where you can revisit who you are, why you started, what motivated you to launch this thing in the first place. What big dreams did you have that you solidified as you took the first, second, and third steps into launching your business? So resolve is the first thing. And the second R, he said, was resilience. I've found that I've needed to stop watching the news most days. Martin and I were just talking this morning about it, and I was like getting all up in arms. My face was turning red. I was so upset by something. I found that I need to stop watching the news because it really negatively affects my resilience. It strips hope away from me. And this time takes a deep level of resilience to be able to look at yourself, to look at your community, to look at your business and say, we are going to make it. It's going to look very, very different when we come out the other side of this. But the thing that's going to take you through that is a kind of recommitment to your own resilience and doing all the things necessary. We're big fans of self-care at Good Voice Group, doing all the things necessary to maintain your resilience and even to increase it through this time. The third R is, I think I said there were four. Now I'm looking at his answer. Maybe there are only three because there's a lot of R words through here. He says a return to how we will re-engage the world. So like we said, things are going to be really different. This is changing a lot already. It's changing a lot. And there's some ways that I want to talk later in our conversation about really amazing, positive ways that it's changing. As the whole story of the pandemic unfolds, what we can be doing right now as small business owners is preparing ourselves for how we'll come out of it on the other side, how we will re-engage. And I think that is related to a resolve for our own aspirations and a resilience to make it through. And then on the other side, a really hopeful, a really enthusiastic re-engagement with the world as it will be. And the last thing he says is a reimagination. And I think it's super important, especially for creative businesses, to hold on to this concept of imagination. The way we put it is that your imagination, your faculty to imagine, is a world-construing mechanism. That's a big $10 word. What we mean is that is the way in which you create a reality that isn't already there. So if you're presented with a problem, I want to take, for example, a local coffee shop just down the street from us. We're good friends with the owner. We're very frightened when the order for all the restaurants and coffee shops in the city and in the state came for them to close down. We were really nervous for our friends because we thought, oh, how are they going to make it? But at the same time, the order sort of contained the solution because the order said, coffee shops have to close, but grocery stores can stay open. It's your imagination when you receive some order like that, some challenge and some problem within your business. It's your imagination that's going to allow you to see the possibilities and the opportunities and not just the roadblock. So what our friends did was, reading the order carefully, saw that they can't be open as a coffee shop, but they can be open as a grocery store. And so they set up a little neighborhood market and they're killing it. They're doing great. They're selling things that people need, toilet paper and hand sanitizer when they can get their hands on it, but also fresh fruit and vegetables and local artisan bread and chips that they would normally serve in their cafe. And they're just now selling as a bag of chips. It didn't take a ton of money. They didn't have to change a lot, but they had to have the imagination to see that they can still move forward and be something within their core, within the core of who they are, that doesn't get away from their mission and their vision. But it pivots enough to where they can keep operating. So those are the four R's: resolve, resilience, return, and reimagination.
It's wonderful. And Harris, thank you so much. Thank him for us that he took the time. That was beautiful. And well, Jeremy, you're the writer, obviously the storyteller and the people connector in the group. No, I could listen to you all day. It can be hard right now to know how to offer your products without sounding like you don't understand what's going on in the world. So what is your advice to businesses wanting to connect with their customers, show they have a heart and empathy, and also keep their business open with sales and engagement?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And honestly, we would answer that question the same way whether there is a pandemic or not. This is why we always start with all of our clients with a process of understanding. And the way we come at that is to say the two most important values as you are engaging with your customers is as human beings are empathy and curiosity. And I think especially in this time, it's deeply important. What empathy does is it allows us to come into contact with customers, which are often for us a source of income, right? They're sort of dollars on paper. Empathy allows us to come into contact with them as real human beings. Human beings are complex, complicated, and also in many ways really simple and kind of predictable. And I don't mean that as a criticism. I just mean like we're all really similar. And so we intuitively understand each other. What empathy invites us to do is to imagine all the things that I'm feeling, the ones that I can put my fingers on, the ones that I can't. Certainly other people are feeling that also. So am I feeling anxiety? Then my customers are feeling anxiety. Mm-hmm. Am I feeling a sense of demotivation and maybe a creeping depression and tiredness? Then my customers are probably feeling that also. Am I feeling also this strange sort of defiant hope? I think I am. Like on my best days, I am. Then my customers are probably feeling that too. What empathy does is it just names those things. Here's how I'm feeling. And I imagine if I'm feeling that way, you're feeling that way too. Because what I think customers need to know is that the person on the other side of that email, on the other side of that audio podcast, on the other side of that banner on the side of a bus, they're a real human being. They feel like me. What empathy allows for us to do is to connect, connect deeply.
Yeah. Let me give you some German background to that, because we always have to communicate that to our clients too. This all kind of sounds a little aloof with like empathy and love and we care about each other. It's like, it's all out there. Why does this work? But there is a very scientific background and backstory to all of this. We're doing this all for a reason and we have a precise approach to this. So you have to understand history a little bit. So advertising and how you communicate messages, especially in the advertising area, has changed over the years dramatically. So if you think back to after the Second World War and that generation, oh, the war is over. Now it's the age of splendor. Let's get a fridge that, it was communicating function over anything else, right? Like this refrigerator holds 50 pounds of beef and it will last for forever. That was communicating the function. And then you would have the neighbors see the fridge and say, oh, I want to have that too. Hubby, can we get one of those fridge? So that's how it, and then you see, imagine those old like 60s ad posters, right? Where the world was okay and women were smoking and like it was function. Like this makes me feel relaxed after a long day. Those were the messages.
Right.
And now skip ahead a couple of, in advertising terms, generations. This is all yesterday. It doesn't work anymore. You can't win by function anymore.
Right.
So right now we're in the age of tribal association. And what this means is every human being is part of a tribe subconsciously. Some people are aware of it, but most of the time you don't even know it and you don't have a choice over it. This is a hardwired capacity of our brain. So that's why we, on average, remember about 100 faces, have so many friends. There's average statistics. And this all goes back to our brains are 80,000 years old. They basically haven't evolved since then. So we're constantly subconsciously building tribes. So this is where the empathy comes in. Mm-hmm. How do we make somebody associate with a tribe? Think of brands as a tribe. Mm-hmm. Apple is not a company, it's a tribe.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Apple is, and you stand in front of this glass-windowed store just with the symbol on it, and you don't have any pre-existing information, you have no idea what they do. And they won't tell you. They right. will not tell you, this is a better phone because of blah, blah, blah. No. Whatever they do, they give you the emotion, and you are part of this highly advanced tech tribe mm-hmm. of up-to-par people that value technology and live it.
Yeah.
That's what they're selling. Yes, there is function, but it's way further down the line. It's second, third hierarchy, right? Number one is be part of this group of
yep.
technology-loving people.
Yeah, yeah.
So this yep. is the age we're living in right now. Hence, empathy. This is where how you speak to people.
Right.
So yeah, sorry for interrupting.
No, it was great. And I think that whole bit illustrates the different things that we bring to the table. Mm-hmm. Empathy and love is that does it for me. And Martin's like, no, I want science and proof and fact. And it's this great combination. We really feel fortunate that we sort of stumbled across it. Martin and I met in a climbing gym a number of years ago. Anyway, I think that empathy, what it does is it moves me as a business owner away from the question, how can I sell you the thing that I make? And to the question, how can I help you be the person you want to be?
That's right. Yeah.
And then curiosity, what it does is it just expands the circle. Empathy creates a tribe. It creates a tribe where we feel safe, we feel heard, we feel known, we feel like we are here to help each other. Yeah. Curiosity, what it does is it just expands that circle. And it says, what are other ways that we can help? What are other ways that I can connect? What are gifts that I have that are not currently being utilized? What are gifts that my staff has? Maybe I'm a coffee shop owner and all I've ever known is that my staff of five baristas are really good at making oat milk cappuccinos or whatever, which is great. I love oat milk cappuccinos. I'm glad they do that. But curiosity in a moment like this allows that business owner to say, hey, what other things can you guys do? What other things are you good at? How can we, as a tribe, committed to each other's well-being and committed to the well-being of our customers, how can we pivot and use other gifts that maybe are being underutilized? And curiosity, what it says is we're not afraid to ask any question. Mm-hmm. Every question is on the table and we're going to see what comes out. And it's going to be scary and it's going to be unknown and it's going to be incredibly exciting if we let empathy and curiosity do their work.
So good, Jeremy. Martin, you're an award-winning designer and also the creative director of the group. So what do you think is crucial right now in design to match the message we're sending out to our customers? What are simple things we can do right now that connects the beauty and the message of our products, services, or experiences? So I guess really what I'm saying is, what is noise and what brings clarity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we talk about this a lot with clients. Mm. And something that always comes up is we have to educate people to be brave. And this is true for messaging, but probably more true visually. Mm-hmm. People are afraid to stand out. Mm-hmm. But we always tell them, be afraid to not stand out. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, and especially in this, as you said, day of noise, clarity and sometimes being loud, depending on what your brand and company is about, is a good thing. So you need to, especially now, focus on things to stand out. And we always have this conversation also with, well, that's probably not applicable to my business because I'm doing birdseed, for example, right? And it's like, well, no, that's it matters for every single company. Right. It literally doesn't matter what you do. Mm-hmm. The same rules apply for everyone. If you sell birdseed, you can always be the guy that has figured out the very best seed for that very exotic bird, and you are the one that cares and loves them as much as nobody else does. Mm-hmm. And you're the professional for that kind of niche of birdseed, right? So there's always an approach of, well, why does it matter? It matters deeply because you could be the best in your part, in your niche.
Right.
And that's always, you know, if you don't know anything else to do, focus on what you're really good at. mm-hmm. and try to make that your loudest message.
Mm-hmm.
So clarity in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for either of you
yeah.
or both of you. What do you see businesses not doing right now and that you believe they're missing an opportunity to connect with their customers in new ways?
I've gotten a ton of emails. It turns out I've apparently subscribed to hundreds of email lists over my lifetime. And they're all emailing me and letting me know all the things that they're doing to make sure that their supply chain and their warehouse and their warehouse workers and their delivery people are all following these new cleanliness protocols. And I think that's great. I think it's really important. But that's the noise. Mm-hmm. Everybody is saying the same thing and there's nobody who's standing out. What I don't see anybody doing is expressing themselves as though they're real humans. Like a robot could have written that email. Here's the new Clorox that we're using. And here's the, maybe I can't say Clorox on the podcast. Here's the new cleanser I'm using. Here's the, you know, the new steps we're taking, but how are you feeling?
Mm-hmm.
What are you hoping about? My wife has put something up on our wall. I don't know where she got it. And I love to give credit where credit is due. And I wish I could in this situation, but I just don't know where it came from. But it was a long list of questions to ask yourself in this season. And the last one, the last question on the list is, what are the possibilities now? What are the possibilities now? Maybe that came from you, Gene. and I think it's such a good question. Don't ignore that the time is really hard. Don't ignore it, but don't fixate on it. And I see a lot of people fixating on it in their messaging, how hard the time is, how devastating it's going to be. But I don't hear anybody saying, and here's the way we're going to weather it. Here are the possibilities that we've discovered. Here's how we changed our coffee shop to a market. Come and purchase some bananas and onions or whatever. So that's my sense, is it feels like everybody is letting, and those layers of things that we talked about, we're all feeling earlier, anxiety and fear and a strange sort of defiant hope and maybe some energy for the future. We're all letting the fear and anxiety speak more loudly than the hope and the energy for the future. That's my sense.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Mm-hmm. And also, first, yes, it's not seeing it as a barrier, see it as an opportunity, mm-hmm. as crazy as this might sound, mm-hmm. but there are plenty of examples out there. All you have to do is do a little bit of research. You know, there have been cities being hit pretty hard, and there are always people that will make it despite the hardship. And then people who, you know, just say, okay, this is the hard part now, mm-hmm. and then kind of give up.
Mm-hmm.
But there's plenty of examples out there. Look at like Bergamo, for example, in Italy has some absolutely, and that's what I love about, some of those creative approaches of people, because it really shows you how powerful, you know, the imagination of some people is. Look at Italy, how some of the small businesses reacted, how musicians teamed up with mm-hmm. doctors and nurses, and they created that song, and it's absolutely, I got tears in my eyes, mm-hmm. you know, but like, this is the kind of...
A German started crying. I mean, it's so rich. It's so good.
It's got to be powerful.
Yeah.
but, you know, they came up with this song, an initiative to support your local businesses and the people involved. And then, you know, it was from a local singer-songwriter teaming up with nurses, and they were singing over their phone, holding up the message. It was so powerful. And mm-hmm. what... You know, this is not in business terms, of course, but then people started leaving their flat, living with the parents so that the nurses could move closer to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Then local businesses supported them with giving them free food, prepackaged in front of the door in the morning. And like it, you know, kicked off this domino effect of we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And all it took was the idea of one singer-songwriter mm-hmm. to like, hey, we are Bergamo, Italy. Let's connect. Let's yes. be together.
Yeah.
Despite the hardship, the hardest hit area in Italy.
Yeah.
But there can be a very positive message still.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful.
One of the things I think that we've seen come out of this on social media, on YouTube, maybe even to a certain degree on the news, is a shift in who we consider our true heroes.
Mm.
I'm not anti-celebrity. I think celebrities play a really important role in kind of creating a cultural ethos and helping to determine and develop a conversation across whatever boundaries you can imagine. But celebrities now stripped of their studios and of their studio audience, who are now broadcasting their show from their bathroom or from their living room or whatever. All of a sudden we found out like, oh, these people are kind of a lot like us. Like I've got a living room and I've got a webcam on my MacBook I've got a little microphone I can set up and I'm basically Jimmy Fallon, you know? what we're seeing is this deep connection to the people that restock the shelves in our grocery stores, to the doctors and nurses who are anonymous because they're wearing masks and goggles, to school teachers that teach our kids every day. I saw a post on Facebook recently that said, you know, I've done this homeschooling thing now for 2 days and I think teachers should be paid $1 billion a day. and I think what we're having is our eyes open to a new sense of who the heroes are. So then the question for business owners is, how do I become a part of a conversation that celebrates these new heroes? How do I incorporate that into the things that I'm already doing, into the gifts that I bring to the table, and how can that be a part of the new thing that I do? Don't hear me criticizing business owners right now, because we're sort of right at the beginning of trying to figure out what do we do now. And I want to give people space to do that. What I would want business owners to hear from me is it's okay to not be certain right now. It's totally fine to feel like I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I would want them to feel like, you know, I think I'm going to take a break. Maybe even just for a day, where I'm not going to think about any of it as much as I can, as much as it's in my power to not think about it. I recognize that we're sort of all saddled with it all the time, but I want to invite them to take a break, 24 hours, and then come back to the table with a kind of renewed sense of the possibilities as they engage their imagination. And I'm hopeful for that. I think that can happen, and I think it already is.
As a company, as you're navigating these new waters yourselves over these past weeks, how have you adapted, and what new insight are you seeing for yourselves and for your own company and how you want to move forward?
Yeah. It's a great question. I wish we had a really great answer to it.
We kind of, you know, we're figuring this out as we go too. But I mean, this is nothing new. We're basically, like, we have one of our clients that is like a students regularly meet up. So you already know from the schools that, you know, this whole thing works online too. So we're doing, for that client, we're doing everything online through webcams now too. So there is always, there's a lot of clever people out there. So you don't always have to invent the wheel, right? Just look at what are other people doing, use the concept, build on it, make it yours, you know, like add the specificity of what do you need, especially on top of it. You have a great solution. Along the way, you might even find a better solution. The only thing that's really hurtful is not thinking about this at all.
Yeah.
You know, just evolve with it as we go along. So we're still figuring it out.
Yeah, I had a friend who did some microeconomic work in Africa. I don't remember what country it was. And he came back and told me the story. What he and his organization do is help tribal communities within Africa figure out what gifts they already have in their mix that they can create a microeconomy around and bring to market. And there was a woman who had a field. Most of these people live in an agrarian world and they subsist on food that they grow. Some of them were able to grow enough food to then also sell in the market. And she looked at her field and it was full of rocks and hundreds of rocks. And you can't grow food in a field that's full of rocks. through a process of what's called appreciative inquiry, my friend led this woman and her family and her community through a process of reimagining their field, reimagining the problems in their field, and asking, rather than asking, what are the barriers to you growing food in this field? They asked, what are the possibilities that the things in your field provide? So what they did was they discovered in the community right next door a need for something to line their irrigation ditches. Turns out the best thing were the rocks in this woman's field. So she took rocks that were the central barrier to her flourishing in a microeconomy by growing food and selling it in a market and turned that into her core product. So she can dig rocks out of her field and sell them to the neighbors next door so they can grow food more efficiently with irrigation ditches. And I think that what that illustrates for me is, and for us at Good Voice Group is, we tend to have these two categories. What are the things that we're good at and what are the barriers for us? And what this time is allowing for us is to shift that second category of what are the things that are barriers into how can those things be gifts also? And so I think the way that's played out for us, to answer your question more specifically, is the work of understanding that we do, we think is unique within the world of companies like ours. It's really difficult in that you have to be deeply patient with the process. So we see that, we saw that as a barrier. Well, we have to be with people. We have to be able to see them. We have to observe their body language and ask lots of questions and drink wine with them and have hors d'oeuvres over a table because it's about connecting as human beings. Okay. So we saw that as a barrier. It's just really hard. What we recognize is that we can teach this sort of thing. And so we've been doing a lot more online teaching, teaching through an organization in Denver, and then there's an organization in Canada that is wanting to license some of our teaching content. We're not teachers. Like, that's not why we're in this. We'd rather be with people and help them do it. But if we can see that rather than as a rock, see it as something that can line an irrigation ditch, then we can pivot to doing more teaching in a time when being with people is just not possible. So rather than seeing that as a barrier, seeing it as another possibility. And that's, it's happening for us. It's important, I think, for us to say there's no silver bullet. It's somebody, I think it was it Picasso who said, most of the time creativity just looks a lot like hard work. we're all gonna have to do a lot of hard work. There's no getting around that. And small business owners are no strangers to hard work. They're some of the hardest working people that I know. But if we can begin to shift the lenses through which we see our gifts and our barriers and start seeing some of those barriers as gifts, hidden gifts, I think some real possibilities will come out of that.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that's a great visual that we'll all go away with from this talk, is just to keep that in mind. What is our field of rocks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And we all have it. And, So for you, as you lead businesses and marketing and branding and content, when you go to a website for the very first time, when you have a new client, you're going to their website, what is often missing? What can be so clear to us as business owners, because we're so intimate with our own brand, but viewers or customers have a hard time figuring out because we're not being clear?
Yeah.
What always strikes me still these days, that I can't believe it, is some of those, especially when it comes to websites and you go on them for the first time, they don't tell you what they're doing.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of the very most basic idea and concept you could think of, right? Like, I don't know anything about this company. I probably heard the name. I got an email or however I made the first connection. I go there and then I'm actually spending 2 or 3 or more minutes figuring out what do they actually do? What do they sell? And that's kind of a time barrier, especially when it comes to websites, where you lose almost everybody.
Right.
So if you look at good examples, the very, you know, top out there, like Google is bringing out new headphones, you know, a little bit like the AirPods. But if you look at that, there's a huge picture right away. Nice animation. Google earphones are here. You know, like the simplicity is, and that's a big company. They're doing that for a purpose.
Yep.
Those first kind of second impressions of telling people what do you do, convincing them in an image that you're doing it well and better than anybody else, and you know, bringing all that message into one screen right in front.
Yeah,
that's what a lot of businesses are just not doing.
Yeah, what is the statistic, Martin? The people will spend. You have what is it like? 20 seconds to capture their attention on a website. I can't.
Oh, much less.
So I thought it was like 3 to 5. I mean, it's almost.
There's a lot going on, especially subconsciously. So a lot of people say that it kind of relates to how we, you know, relate to humans when we have a first impression, which is a fraction of a second.
Right.
So it's like a over. Yeah. Okay, I already made my subconscious judgment.
Yeah.
You get the same with websites.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes in layers. But the very first impression is usually, is this legit? Does this look professional? Is this a real thing? And that's so quick and subconscious that you all know those moments, right? Moments you look at like a, you know, food supplement company, like, oh, are they legit? No.
Yeah.
That's the amount of time it took.
Scam.
To yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the very first thing you have to address.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And then it goes in layers as the interest and the observer gets more aware. What do they do? So you're already second one, two, and so on. Then, you know, depending on how enticing the message and the imagery is, the longer you can extend this period of somebody trying to figure you out, the better.
I think that's totally right. And just to add another layer to that, we have a client who it's a big print company, and so they're what's important to them is the machines they have, the speed at which they can print signs or stickers or t-shirts or trade show booths or whatever. And so their initial thought was we should feature those machines because that's what sets us apart. So they had, you go to their website and it's like, you see these massive print presses that are deeply important to the business owner and that nobody else cares about. and I don't mean to be rude, like just people don't care about what you care about in the sort of like back of the house of your company. So you can't, clarity is not, here's what I do, here's the machine I have, here's how much it costs, here's how fast it works. Clarity is, here's how you can become who you want to be with the assistance of what I do as a business owner. Here's how I help you be the person you want to be. That's the kind of clarity that people are looking for.
Right.
When they come to your website, they really genuinely don't care how fast you can print t-shirts. They want to know, are you going to help me be the kind of successful person that I'm interested in being?
And there's a really powerful tool in design thinking. It's just doing user personas, right? So really think about an interview and try to get as much data as you can on who is actually visiting the website. What are they looking for? If I know that you're doing most of your work is actually stickers, but people like that because you're doing some super high quality stickers with a high turnaround, and you know, people accept paying a little bit more because it's the quality and the speed, then why do you put a printing machine on top that nobody understands, right?
Like, exactly.
No, then make that your message.
Yeah.
Tell them, oh, this is unprecedented quality stickers. In 2 days you have them. Here are some examples. Empathy, right? Like, make your user personas, empathize on every single one of them. Find the reason why you are speaking to them specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. The process of user personas is that empathic process that's sort of just codified into a step-by-step thing. And so what we do when we're doing user personas is we actually find photos, stock photos from some website or whatever, and we put them on a screen and we give that person a name and we determine how old they are, what their level of education is, where do they shop, what do they name their pets? Because what we want to do is get into their mind so that we can ask the questions, not that we're asking, but that they're asking. And it seems like when we visit websites for the first time, especially if, you know, a lot of small business owners make their sites themselves, and that's okay I'm always impressed with how far a small business owner can get having designed his or her own website. But what we notice is that it feels like very little time was spent understanding the customer and a lot of time was spent telling the story of the business owner. And I think there's a place for that, for telling your own story. There's certainly a place for it, but it's not on the homepage, right?
Yeah.
So many businesses have different revenue streams that fit under the umbrella of their business. And some businesses are keeping two separate brands and don't know how to combine them. So what is your advice in these situations?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll let Martin answer that one.
Sorry, Martin.
That's all right. Well, it's always circumstance, right? And this is, I don't think there is a right out of the blue answer that is like a general answer that applies to every single business that has that problem. It really depends on what you're doing. So this is the understanding part. Mm-hmm. Yes, it might make sense that you have kind of two companies running under one branding. Sometimes it really doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. We had those cases too. Where you would actually benefit much more from visually and, you know, message-wise separating them as much as you can. Sometimes it makes sense to still separate them, but hold them under an umbrella of kind of a third bigger parent brand. Mm-hmm. But it's very case individual. I don't think that there's a general answer.
Yeah, I think what the business owner can do that is operating those two brands is ask themselves, what do these brands do for the customers that are engaging with these brands? And if there's enough overlap in what those outcomes are, then they can bring those two brands together and save themselves a lot of time. And I think you get a compounding effect when you bring two brands that have overlap together. Mm. But if it's very, very different, for example, there's a distillery in Central Texas that has shifted during this time from making, I think they distill whiskey, and now they're making hand sanitizer. Well, when this is over, it probably doesn't make sense for them to operate the hand sanitizer brand and the whiskey brand under one brand. It probably makes sense for them to have two separate brands because they're doing very, very different things, very different outcomes for the customers. But if they shifted from making whiskey to making gin, then it makes sense to keep that under the same brand because of the similar outcome. So that's maybe a diagnostic question that your listeners can ask is, what are the outcomes? What are the reasons why people are engaging with these brands? And if there's enough overlap, then I think it would make sense to bring them together.
Yeah, good advice. So copy. I love copy on a site and on social media and blogs. This can be really scary for many business owners. And because they don't want to get it wrong, they do nothing. What are some exercises that business owners can walk through to get clear about their message and to make sure they are consistent with their copy across all platforms?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it goes back to what initially I think of, and I'd love to hear Martin's take on this, is the hard, long work of user personas, of really understanding who they're talking to. Who's coming to my site? What is it that they're needing to hear in order to make the next step of becoming a customer? And that's a long process. You have to give it the time that it takes. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is a copywriter. Not everybody is a designer. Right. Right. And so it's totally okay to not be good at it. In that process, here's the thing about clarity. The difficulty with clarity is that you don't know when you're not doing it. Because when you say something, it's totally clear to you. But clarity is in a communicative act. There's three parts. There's the sender and the receiver and the message. And all three of those things have to be aligned in order for what we call a felicitous communicative act to occur, in order for clarity and understanding to happen. And so I would suggest getting in touch with a receiver. So the small business owner writing the copy is the sender. The copy is the message. And you never or rarely talk to the receiver. So just go find someone, send them what you wrote and ask them what they heard. Test it and see. Again, it's okay to not be good at it. Most small business owners are not copywriters by profession. So it's okay to not be good at it. So it's totally fine to ask somebody and to give you input and tweak it as you get more and more input, saying, you know, I'm hearing this and not that or whatever.
I say that to our clients all the time that come for business consulting or even in our business classes, that you have all the stories, you have all of the love for your product. Just sit down with someone else in your life and tell them to write down what they hear you say and then give it back to you, because it's right in front of your face.
Totally.
We overcomplicate it, and it can get so much more clear when you do sit down with somebody. So I completely agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What can an agency like the Good Voice Group do for new businesses? And what can you offer to those that have been business for years, but are often not seeing things that need to be maybe updated or more clear as their business has grown or changed?
I think our core offering is a guided, facilitated process of understanding. We instinctually value the people and the work that our clients are. And what we offer to them is an invitation to value themselves, enough to spend the time to deeply understand who they are and why they do what they do. The biggest compliment that we can receive from a client is when they say, we feel like we understand ourselves more having worked with you than we did before. We love working with a variety of clients in different industries. Often when we're writing a proposal for a new client, every time they will ask, well, how many print shops have you worked with? How many food service companies have you worked with? How many universities have you worked with? And our answer is, even if it's not true, our answer is none. And that's actually to your benefit, because we're going to ask questions that occur to us having never worked with a university, that won't occur to you because you're a university. And universities are supposed to ask these kinds of questions, and food service are supposed to ask these kind of questions. Mm-hmm. And so we offer a kind of understanding that comes from a sort of perpendicular existence in the world, an existence that is very different than their own. We come with a different voice to the table, and ask questions that kind of come out of left field, which is how we develop understanding and clarity.
Yeah. Maybe so, to sum that up a little bit, we always talk internally about creating a brand humanity. And I think that is true. Bringing that to a company, whether small or big, whether just, you know, startup, when we were part of their team, which we had a client recently, like starting the whole concept and being part of that as they develop themselves as a company versus a company that's been around for years and this is established in its field. I think what both of those can greatly benefit from is that brand humanity. Mm-hmm. And we understand brand humanity as being perceived as a person. So your company, to the exterior, how it's perceived in the world, is actually very close to being a person. Mm-hmm. If we can achieve that, and then through our process of understanding, and you know, there's a lot of educational part in that too. If the people who are part of the company can understand that concept and have that person, that kind of that company that, you know, lives as a person, as perceived as a person, they have that in mind in their daily life with the interactions they do, then this will, you know, this will be probably the biggest impact and benefit for them.
Gene, if I can answer the second part of that question, what do we see sort of longstanding businesses doing as they struggle to adapt? And I think it comes back to the longer a company is in operation, the further away from their initial motivation and purpose they get. And what we often want to do with our clients is to bring them back to that initial seed of motivation. What is the thing that got you out of bed?
I absolutely agree with that 100%. Because we found it in ourselves that we are like, okay, we got off track and let's get back on track. And that happens over and over. But I think that's so, so true. When you get into the busyness of a business, you can forget some of those key things. And so,
I had a teacher in high school. It was a psychology class, and he was a PhD in something important, I'm sure. And so, you know, as a high schooler, you think you know everything and you think all your questions are the most important and you think you're so deeply philosophical. And I remember, I'm sure it was me, maybe it was a friend of mine, thinking we were asking, you know, a really revolutionary question. We said, you know, Dr. Robertson, what's the meaning of life? And he said, and it's obviously like, you're a high schooler, probably you've got some time to figure that out. You don't have to know right now. What he said was, it's just one thing. And we said, yeah, exactly. So what is that thing? And he said, it's just one thing. And that's all he would say. It's just one thing. And I think for companies to circle back to their purpose and their motivation, the thing that drove them from the beginning, and to hone it to just one thing. So that's what creates consistency in their copy. If there's consistency in what they believe about their being and their purpose, there will be consistency in their copy. If we start with copy, it's going to be all over the place. You can't start with copy. You have to start with who you are and why you're doing what you're doing. And if you do that, even if you're not a great copywriter, you're going to have consistency. You're going to say the same thing over and over again. We find that our clients are scared to say the same thing over and over again because it feels like I'm just being really repetitive. Well, on average, it takes people hearing the same thing 7 to 10 times before they internalize it. So if you say it 3 times on your homepage, on your website, or 3 times in your commercial on YouTube or whatever, nobody will hear it. Nobody will get it. You have to be repetitive to the point where you feel like you're being annoying in order for people to begin to understand who you are and what you do. So that consistency of brand presentation is super important. And it comes from the willingness to engage the process of understanding oneself, their purpose and their motivation from the very beginning.
Yep. So good. Design is so fun for many of us, and we're used to going with the trends when it comes to decor or clothing, etc. But when it comes to the design of your website, how often should a business really tweak that, and when should they totally update it, and how long should design decisions really last?
Great question. I think maybe answering by stepping back one step, I think especially when it comes to website and then your branding choices, the worst thing you could do is follow a style or a trend. That's a lot of designers do that out there, and it won't last you very long. Not just from experience, but here is a very scientific reasoning for it. If you always, as a business and also on your website, you want to be the guy.
Yeah.
You want to be the lady. You want to be that one person, that one business that does its thing better than everybody else in its respective niche, or you are just the sole provider of this one thing. Because especially nowadays, and when we're talking website and e-commerce, how are you going to compete? If you want to compete over price, you're going to lose that battle sooner or later. There will always be somebody cheaper. So what are the things left to do? And actually proven are the best things you can do, be the best in your category, in your niche, and reflect that visually and in your messaging.
Yeah.
You know, that's how every single success story of the big companies around us have been made.
Yep.
IBM used to make the best computers for big businesses and corporations, especially in the financial area and so on. That's how they grew themselves.
Yeah.
Apple, that's the best device that combines a phone, a music player, and everything in one. Be the best in your category. And again, this is a bold undertaking, right? This takes bravery to stand out and you know, own your personality as being the one who knows the best about this niche. So I think if you can reflect that in your messaging and wording on your website, not following a style, then you're doing great.
Yeah. One of the things that Martin always says, actually, I think it's that I always say that Martin always says, maybe I'm the one who's saying it all the time. The one of the things that Martin has taught me is the difference between art and design. And art is the expression of an individual artist of their internal being to the outside world. The artist saying what they want to say to the world, which is great. And I think there's a huge place for that. When we're talking about design, what we're talking about is problem solving. Design is problem solving. It's not personal expression. It's problem solving. So think about two major companies, one that has never changed their logo and one that has changed their logo a number of times. So Coca-Cola, their logo, that script logo, except for that little season in the 80s when they had New Coke, which is a total disaster, they've never changed their logo. And we immediately know what it is. Right. And we associate really good vibes with it. They've got a great kind of brand ethos. They've never changed their logo. Apple has changed the logo, I don't know how many times, 8 or 10 times. It started with a pencil drawing kind of Isaac Newton
stencil drawing
under a tree with an apple falling on his head. Very complicated, this ribbon that said who they were. Yep. Very complex. I think what Apple's changes illustrate is they're not changing their logo to keep up with trends. Mm-hmm. They're changing their logo in the direction of more and more clarity and simplicity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they went from this very complex lithograph wood carving logo to the rainbow logo to another iteration of the rainbow logo to eventually they have this flat two-dimensional apple. Mm-hmm. But we all immediately know what it is. Mm-hmm. They have honed their visual identity down to just the necessity. Yeah. So if you're going to make changes in that direction.
To simplify.
But I think the basic rule should always be, does it make sense for your business? Don't ask, does it look cool? Or, you know, can somebody clearly see that I'm selling birdseed? No, it has to be a conscious business decision reflected in whatever mm-hmm. visual brand representation you end up with. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to say it's a style, but does it make business sense?
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Especially now you see all those big car companies and you'll see those are all changes, right? Apple didn't completely swap out their logo for something else. It was a distillation. Mm-hmm. They reduced it. Mm-hmm. It was already there. They just removed the unnecessary parts. Mm-hmm. And you can see that, especially nowadays in car companies, mm-hmm. BMW, Volkswagen started it, Nissan, they're doing those super simplistic one-dimensional lines now for the this is probably the biggest change in the history. Mm-hmm. But again, it's a change. It's a little adaption. One might perceive it as a style, but it's not. If you know where it's coming from, it's a conscious business decision. Mm-hmm. So they're all building electric cars now. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going into the digital age with their cars. The website is very minimalistic, mm-hmm. but they're all coming from going into this electric age. You now have touch interfaces in your car that control the internal systems, navigation. Everything is screen-based. So now they're just making the logical step and going away from this chrome bling, you know, 20, 30 year old, that's how you build cars, into now you're building electric cars mm-hmm. that have these LEDs and the refined lines. So they're reflecting that yep. in their brand, but they're not following a trend, so to speak.
Right. Yep.
Well, I think over and over, I think it's, is your why clear? When people come to your site, is it clear what you sell? Mm-hmm. Is it clear how they can connect with you? Is your design clear? Mm-hmm. Is your copy clear? Mm-hmm. And that really takes intention. That takes intention and figuring things out. And if you're great at it, you do it on your own. If you're not great at it, that you need somebody else to reflect it back to you, or you need an agency that can just help you clarify it too.
Yeah,
and so, go ahead.
Oh, sorry to interrupt you, but I think there's something very valuable for, you know, small business owners or mid-size out there. If there's so much knowledge out there, mm-hmm. just start learning those parts, right? There's nothing holding you back from just investing half an hour going on YouTube and listening to a design talk or a copy talk. You don't have to, like Jeremy said, you don't have to be the absolute pro at it. Mm-hmm. Do what you can with your means right now. If along the line you have the money, awesome. Hire a professional who mm-hmm. has the sole expertise on that, who's really good at it. But for you as a small business owner, there's nothing holding you back of just getting more knowledge in that regard mm-hmm. and helping yourself.
Yep.
And that's actually free. All you have to do is invest some time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
Well, Jeremy and Martin, I have loved talking with you today. It's been such a great talk. So I have one last question for you. Hey. I'm going to start with you, Martin. Mm-hmm. If you were not working in the Good Voice Group, what would your alternative career path be?
Ah, that's a tough question. Especially in the last couple of years, I've fallen so in love with the outdoors and climbing, especially living here in Colorado.
Right.
It's absolute world class if you're into climbing. Mm-hmm. It's just all around you here. I don't know. If I would be brave enough and not be bound to the Good Voice group, probably become a guide or work somewhere in the outdoor industry for sure.
Yeah, I can believe that for sure.
Yeah,
that's great.
Okay, Jeremy, now you.
I would be a stuntman and a therapist.
Ooh. Oh!
The first one I would not guess.
Oh, that's no. When I was in high school, that's all I wanted to be was a stuntman. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, I love adventure. I love taking risks. I love feeling like I'm a little bit on the edge of safety. So that's the stuntman piece. I also really love explosions.
all makes sense to me.
Yeah. but I really love helping people understand who they are. I think about myself as a kind of partner on people's own sort of life journey and discovering who they are, what their purpose is, the ways in which they're wired and what they feel like they're made for. And so I think that's the therapist piece. I don't know if I can mix those two careers, but I would give it a shot.
I would love to see you try. Yeah. Well, please let everyone know where they can find you and how to connect with all of your services.
Of course. Our URL is, I should know this.
It's goodvoicegroup.com.
Goodvoicegroup.com, yeah. They can connect with us there, and our email addresses are there on the site, and they're just, I'm Jay Reeves at goodvoicegroup.com, and Martin is M. Drexler at goodvoicegroup.com. And we'd love to chat. Like, if anybody wants to ask questions following up here on the podcast, we'd love to give some time to your listeners just to help them tease out maybe a particular thing that's irking them in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. I've actually written quite a few things off to the side that I just love how you have said them, just how you have put such beautiful visuals through words. And so thank you for that. It's been a lot of fun for me too.
Great. Well, thanks, Regine. It was such a great honor to be on the show.
Thank you, guys. Say hi to Harris, please.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do. Thanks, Jean.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening and see you next time.